Archives. This is Rachel Leagy.
And Erin Redekop.
So this is, well, not our last European recording, but we're getting to the end of them.
So sad.
And all of the other ones we recorded in Europe.
Yeah.
But we are home now in Canada.
We're in my apartment, which is normally lovely, but feels really depressing right now because we're not in Europe.
Soon. So, yeah, I mean, like, we came home, and, of course, life picked up, and it's actually been close to a month now that we've been home.
Yeah, it's been insane. I wound up with a new position at work. Rachel now has to move. Sad face.
That's okay.
That, yeah, no, life is...
Life is life.
Life is life. So we've been super busy. Mm-hmm. But we're here again, and but, yeah, we're happy to talk about our trip.
And we still need to talk about Budapest today.
Oh, I loved Budapest.
It was absolutely fantastic. So we just had to kind of, like,
scratch
our brains and remember, go over all the details of the trip.
Look through some photos.
Yeah, so the first thing I'm going to say about Budapest on the Tipsy Archives is how much we love Hungarian wine.
Oh my god, Hungarian wine was the best thing.
Yeah, so today we went to the liquor store and we picked up some Dunavar, which I've been drinking since I got home because it's usually like the only Hungarian wine at the BCL.
Yeah, and it's like, it's $9, but yeah. It's
great,
so
$9
good.
Wine.
Hungary makes the best wine. Like, Rachel and I had the best experience with Hungarian wine, which we will get into later. But, oh my god, in Hungary, you pay like $2 a glass.
Less.
And you get, yeah, less.
Yeah.
And you get, like, the most delicious wine. It will beat whatever wine we have here.
Like, I loved Paris, and I loved their wine, mm-hmm. but as far as, like, delicious, cheap, bang-for-your-buck wine, Budapest, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Budapest was incredible.
It was great. So we did get some Hungarian wine from the liquor store.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have some Hungarian wine, but it's red, and it's really hot in Vancouver right now, so we decided not to drink it.
Oh, yeah, that was so good, that wine.
We'll drink it eventually.
I wish that I could have brought back so much more wine, but it kind of takes up a lot of room in the old suitcase.
Next time we bring, like, a solid suitcase just for wine.
Yeah.
Except the problem is, like, limits, so we'll have to just ship it into Canada.
Okay, so we left... I think we'll start off by talking about we left Ljubljana.
Yeah.
And for this portion of the trip, we had decided to, or I had booked us something called Day Trip.
Yeah.
Which was it's a private driver who comes to pick you up. It's like somebody local who lives in one of the countries that you are going to or from.
Yeah.
And you pay them, obviously it varies, but it ends up being, it's a bit more than if you fly. But you get to stop along the way and have lunch. Like, you can pick where you want to stop. You can mm-hmm. pick if you want to sightsee. And we just thought it would be a really nice change because they pick you up from where you're staying and they mm-hmm. drop you off where you're staying. So you don't have to worry about taking a cab or directions or anything. And so it's really a very chill way to travel.
Well, and I think when you actually take in consideration, like, if you have to take the train or take a cab to where you're going, to get on the train or to get on a plane, it's almost comparable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it was such a easy way to travel.
Yeah, we had this driver, his name was Dusan. He was Hungarian.
Yeah.
He picked us up in Slovenia. You know, like, right near our door, and put our bags in the car, and we stopped at a cute little town called Ptuj.
Oh, it was adorable.
It was very, like, medieval and cute.
But also very Mediterranean.
Yeah,
too.
That's true.
I mean, that was sort of the way Slovenia was.
Yeah.
Slovenia was, like, medieval meets Mediterranean.
Yeah, we stopped and we had lunch and... You know, it was interesting, too, because the guy, he's a local, you know, Hungarian guy, and we got to chat a bit about, I think Erin was snoozing in the back seat a little bit.
I was so tired, and also you put me in the back seat and I just fall asleep.
And so this Dusan and I were chatting about, you know, like, what he thought about local politics and what the working conditions were like and a little bit about the history of the country, and it was just interesting to kind of hear him talk about, I mean, we even got into, like, what did he think about President Trump and
stuff
like
that. Oh, I was awake for that, yeah.
And so that was, you know, it's always nice to connect with, you know, somebody local to the area you're staying in and sort of get their worldview.
Well, and it was also really interesting because he was talking about Budapest and, like, how he didn't want to live in Budapest because he found it too expensive to live in.
Yeah.
And it would, he would ask us things about, like, what it was like to live in Canada, and I just didn't even want to answer about how much it costs to live in Vancouver.
Well, yeah, and so, like, he's saying, you know, oh, the city's too big and too dirty and too expensive, and it's not for me, and obviously maybe he's not a big city guy.
Yeah.
But as we found when we got into Budapest, that city is cheap as fuck.
Yeah, it's insanely cheap, and I do remember at one point...
So I'm like, how cheap are the little towns?
Oh, I know. So I think Rachel and I's next trip is going to be just around, like, Hungarian small towns.
But, I mean, he did say, of course, that people don't make any money.
Yeah, and that's the problem. That's the thing, is, like, we both make decent money in Vancouver, and so
the wages,
it's so cheap for us to be in Budapest.
You know, you can be educated, you know, or be, like, a high-level tradesman running a factory, and you're still making what you would make minimum wage here, something
yeah.
like that. Like, you just don't make a lot of money. So, of course, it's not an expensive place to live. Or for us visiting.
Yeah.
It's cheap for us because we're yeah. from a different area.
Well, and we found when we got to Budapest, like, there's a lot of poverty in Budapest. And,
oh, for sure.
More than any place we saw on our trip. And it was actually quite interesting for me is because we, our Airbnb, which we'll get into in a moment, that we were staying next to this sort of big train station, and it was sort of an underground place where you had to go into to cross streets. You had to go underneath because it was just too busy, and it was just filled with homeless people that would come up to you at any time, like if you were at a bakery, because there are bakeries underground. Or
lots of people begging for money.
Lots of people begging. Lots of people that had just lived down there, because there are people with mattresses. It was something like I said to Rachel, I'm really glad that we live in Vancouver, because I think that would be way too overwhelming for me if I didn't live in Vancouver.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate reality that we can kind of phase that out.
Yeah.
Because that's something that we do see. I mean, it was definitely worse there, but I think it wasn't surprising to us to see that many homeless people.
No.
But so to talk a little bit about Budapest as a city, or Budapest as it's pronounced there, because an S sound is pronounced like an SH sound.
Yeah.
It originally was two different towns, Buda and Pest, cut in half by the River Danube.
And the locals still kind of look at it as two different...
Yeah.
Two different... Like, it's one city, but they look at it as being two different areas, and they're very distinctly different.
They are. The Buda side is a more sort of historical, kind of like old world. They have, you know, the cathedral up there. Is it St. Matthew's?
I think it's St. Matthew's.
Or Matthias?
Matthias. St. Matthias, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a little bit more of a clean, touristy, historical area. And the Pest side, where we were staying, was, you know, it is definitely a little bit dirtier, a little bit grimier, but it's more lively. There's more of a night scene and a bar scene.
Yeah.
And, like, it definitely feels like the more kind of alive part of the city. There was no point that I felt in danger.
No.
But I was definitely aware of not wanting to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Or even, like, when our day trip driver dropped us off, he said, pull up the money in the car. Let's not pull the money out on the street.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you just don't want to be careless, necessarily.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, wander alone and have lots of money on you.
Well,
but I never felt threatened.
No, I felt perfectly safe in Budapest. And honestly, I think that's a part of, like, we see the downtown east side quite often in Vancouver. But it's like you want to be aware of your personal belongings a bit more than... Like, we were quite aware of our personal belongings in every area. And, like, if you're pulling cash out of a cash machine, we were definitely more, like, on guard when we were in Budapest. But it's still an amazing city. And, neither of us ever... We wandered around in the dark and, like, it was fine.
Yeah, that last night we were walking home and it was nighttime. It was actually quite quiet and peaceful.
Yeah, it was. It's a very peaceful city if you're not in certain areas.
Budapest is the capital of Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
They are part of the European Union, but they still use the Hungarian florint.
Yeah.
They speak Hungarian, which is a very difficult language.
You can't read it or even try to understand it if you're not Hungarian.
Yeah, they just don't pronounce the letters the same way.
It was the same in Prague, but I really noticed it in Budapest.
I believe that the city was, they kept saying a date, which I don't quite remember. Maybe it was in the 900s. Mm-hmm. That they were settled by the Magyars.
Yeah.
Which I believe is an Asian tribe, similar to, like, Mongols.
Yeah, yeah, there's like definitely that. A connection with that.
So area. I think that's where the language comes from, that it's a bit different because there are Asian roots to it as well, which, interestingly, is closest to Estonian and Finnish in Europe, which is funny because they're not even, like, anywhere near each other.
No.
But they all have these really kind of difficult languages.
Well, I have to admit, when I was younger, just because of the name Budapest,
did you envision something really more Eastern?
Yeah. I really, in my head. And so it was actually not until my parents went to Budapest last year I really started to understand that it was... Because I think I envisioned something more like Istanbul.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think I would have thought the same thing before I went there.
Yeah.
I had a little bit more of that influence.
Yeah. I was definitely... I knew it was Eastern Europe, but I still was expecting more of the Turkish sort of influence in architecture.
So was Hungary part of... It was not part of Yugoslavia.
No, it was not.
It was obviously part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
It was.
The name.
Yeah, but no, it
stayed its own country of Hungary during that period of time.
Well, it was USSR.
Right, it was in the USSR.
Yeah.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
We've been learning a lot about this area of the world. It's very complicated.
It is so complicated, and, like, I've become super fascinated with it. My husband is sometimes like, okay, I get your obsession now, but can we talk about BC politics? Because they're really exciting right now. And I was like, no, we have to talk about what happened in Hungary in World War II.
So we got into our Airbnb.
Yeah.
Which was quite nice.
Oh, it was beautiful. We got our separate rooms for the first time.
Yeah, by separate rooms, it was like I slept on the pull-out couch in the living room. But still, it's like we closed the door and for the first time in our trip, sleep in separate rooms.
Yeah.
Which was pretty luxurious.
Although the first night, I woke up, I had trouble falling asleep because, Rachel has her own bedroom at her place in Vancouver. But I share my bed with my husband. And so I always sleep with somebody. And so I'm like, I would roll over and it'd be like, Pat's not there. Rachel's not there. Oh my god, how do I sleep like
this?
You were
lonely.
I was lonely, and so I got Pat's dragon that I got him from Ljubljana and cuddled it. And probably cuddled a lot of pillows. I'm a needy sleeper.
So we got into our place, and I don't think we had any trouble getting in.
No, we didn't. We had trouble locking it when we wanted out. Yeah, because we needed to get food and money.
We had problems with doors on our trip, but all these doors were it's totally easy. All you have to do is turn it 3 times to the left. Duh.
And you're like, okay.
I've never had to do that in my life. But this one was just it was fine as long as you held the handle up and then turned it a certain way.
Yeah.
But you couldn't figure it out, and I had to email the Airbnb guy, and he was just like, he told me. He was like, just hold it up. And I was like, okay, we figured it out. But at first we were like, fuck, we can't leave the apartment.
Yeah, we were just like, this is awful. And I remember even tweeting out, because I was like, Budapest just seemed very overwhelming when we first got there, especially after coming from Ljubljana, which is so tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just like, fuck, we hate Budapest. Why are we here?
I mean, I knew that I was going to get over it as soon as I went out and had a good time. But I was just kind of like, ugh.
Yeah. Well, and so we headed out.
We
got some groceries. It was easier to find than in Prague, but it still wasn't the easiest. And then we knew we wanted to get a drink and get some money.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rachel had done some research on places that we should go, but we didn't know the names of them because they were all in Hungarian, so we just knew them by, like, images.
We knew we were in a neighborhood that had a lot of ruin bars, which is something that is very popular in Budapest, of sort of, like, these all these bars that had taken over these run-down buildings, some of them completely open to the sky, some of them in buildings.
Yeah.
That were just, like, crumbling old buildings in the Jewish quarter. And but they have been revitalized to be these kind of, like, unique artsy bars.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, if we walk around this area, we're going to find something cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw something that looked like it might be an okay bar. And it was. It was an okay bar.
Yeah, and it looked like a picture that Rachel had seen of a really cool bar. So yeah. We went in there.
And we sat down at a table, and the waitress seriously just sat down at a table and was drinking. And, like, I had to go up to the bar, and then eventually she was like, okay.
It was the weirdest thing. And then, like, the ATMs and the parking meters were sort of combined into one. And so you were like, where do I actually get money?
Yeah.
And then we, like, because everything's in the Hungarian currency. And
plus, I didn't do what I did in Prague, and I was like, I think I'm taking out $100. Oh no, whoops, I accidentally took out like $500 like, because I don't understand how the money works.
Which worked because my ATM card wasn't working in Prague, so we just split that. But yeah, it was hilarious trying to figure out that. And so, you know, eventually we got our drink, we got our money, we got our groceries, and we headed back to our apartment. And that's where the trouble started.
Well, that's when we tried to do laundry.
Yeah.
And cook food.
And
you had a shower and started running some laundry and then realized the washing machine was spilling out all over the floor.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out how to turn the stove on, which I figured out later. You just had to hold the button down for a really long time.
I think we were kind of tired, too.
It was just, like, one of those days where, you know, we couldn't... Everything was frustrating, and especially when water was spilling all over the floor, and I had literally no clean clothes, and I was so cranky because all I wanted was clean clothes.
This is also where Rachel and I learned that we live very well together, because she's just... I was like... What do you need? Because I had been in the shower in my towel, and so I obviously couldn't take control of the situation. So Rachel took control of the situation, and I was like, okay, what do you need? She's like, I need a glass of wine and for you to make me a sandwich.
Yeah.
And I was just went and did that.
I angrily mopped the floor.
And brought you a glass of wine. You drank it while you mopped the floor. I made you a sandwich. We toweled down the rest of the floor, and then actually I think we podcasted about Slovenia.
Yeah, at this point a month later I have no idea what night we podcasted on.
I'm pretty sure that we podcasted then, because I think we actually made a joke about something then, but I think we probably cut it out because we didn't want to give away the Budapest secrets.
It all worked out, and to be fair, our the Airbnb host was great.
Yeah.
I emailed him about the washing machine and everything that we had a problem with, and he responded immediately, and he sent over a friend the next day to check on the washing machine.
He was so cute and lovely.
He was very friendly and nice, and he just said, like, oh, yeah, just run this hose into the bathtub for now. It's not a problem, and it all worked out, and so, like, all of our travel stress was fine the next day.
Yeah, it was great.
So the next day, we woke up, and I think I remember being very, like, okay, fuck you, Budapest. We're going to have a great day today.
Yeah, we were both just like, I don't care what you throw at us. We're taking it. We're going to have an awesome time.
So we took the transit over to the Buda side.
And we learned that Budapest transit can be very slow because there's a lot of gridlock in Budapest. And it was really, really hot on the bus.
There's a lot of traffic, for sure.
Yeah.
But we got over there and we explored the Fisherman's Bastion.
Which is stunning.
I kept comparing it to, like, a King Triton sandcastle.
It, like, it still blows my mind when I think about it, and I'll look back at pictures of us there and be like, how does this exist? Like, it was just this magical world.
So, when you hear Fisherman's Bastion, you probably think it's something that's going to be on the water, but it's not. The reason that it's called that is because there was, like, the Fisherman's Guild building was right in that area.
Yeah, and they could also overlook the Danube River, which Budapest is on, and so they could overlook the river as well.
Yeah, it was built in the late 19th century, and it's a neo-Gothic, neo-Romanesque sort of structure with these very pointy spires. And, like, honestly, it does look quite a bit like a sandcastle. And you can pay a couple extra dollars to walk up on the wall, and it just gives you these stunning views of the river. And so we kind of walked around that area for a while, and we had a wine tasting booked for that afternoon, and we realized that we should probably eat something.
Yes.
Before we did that. And there was, like, a couple of little, like, really adorable restaurants in the sort of corridor of the Fisherman's Bastion. And so we went, and you'd think, like, something like that in a really touristy area is going to be crazy expensive.
Especially because we probably had the best meal that we had on the whole trip.
But we were like, you know, fuck it, let's go to this place. It looks really nice. The view is beautiful. We'll sit there. We both ordered this delicious salmon gnocchi and so this good white wine, and it was absolutely delicious, and the view was wonderful. We looked out over the Budapest Parliament.
Yeah.
And it was super cheap.
Yeah, I think we spent 22 Canadian dollars between the two of us
for
the whole meal.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And then we went and to one of, I think, our highlights of the trip.
Oh, yeah. So Rachel had booked us this incredible wine tasting. It was in the cellars of a old Dominican monastery that's now, like, the actual monastery is no longer there. They've built this, like, cheesy Hilton on top of it. But the cellars are still there.
Yeah, it's called the Faust Wine Cellars.
The Faust Wine Cellars.
Yeah.
And so you go through the Hilton to get to it, and then you start going down all of these sort of little bridges and pathways, and it starts getting really cold and, like, really, like, cave-like. And then you get to the actual tasting room, and there's, like, maybe six tables set up in it. It's,
yeah, it's
very
quite
intimate.
Small.
Yeah.
It's quite small. Oh, I just remembered that other couple that sat near us, but let's talk about that.
They were hilarious.
So we tried a package called the Curiosities of Hungary.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is just in multiple wineries around Hungary. And
yeah.
The sommelier, I guess, was very nice, and I think every single wine we had was delicious.
Oh, I would have taken a bottle of everything home. And the tasting we had, you got to have eight tastings, like, for any of you eight tastings, and then ninth was we got a full glass of whatever our favorite was.
Right.
But, and what did we pay, like $35?
21 euros, so yeah.
Yeah,
like that.
And so it was, for that type of, and, like, to be in the environment we were in.
And then the wine that we bought was, like, $10 a bottle.
Yeah, and there was, like, some of these wines, too, we were looking at, like, I don't know, I started to get to the point that anytime we tried something, I'd convert it to Canadian dollars if we wanted to buy a bottle of it.
It was like $9, $10, $11.
I think the most expensive was $19.
Yeah.
And, yeah. It was the best.
I'm looking at the list on the website here, and I don't know if it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
But we both bought the same. I don't know if they have the one we bought, because the one we bought was the Magi one.
I can pull it up, because I still have it here.
Yeah, you have the wine. So they gave us some whites and some reds, and we both bought the same wine. And I don't normally buy reds, but it was so delicious.
We can't really read it, because it's in Hungarian.
It's the Magus or Magus.
Yeah, Magus.
So M-A-G-U-S.
Yeah. Like a so is that. It's the
it is that one.
Soprani Magus.
The Soprani Magus. So like a Magus, like a magician.
Yeah.
And it's just, really fruity, really delicious. Probably $11. I wish that we could find it here.
I know. There's a part of me is like, can we just order from them and, like, bring it back? I don't even care if I have to pay a little bit more. Because I think even with the, like, customs costs, it'll still be cheaper. Or the same price as the wine we'd buy here, and so much better.
There was definitely a couple wines that they were like, you can buy this from the very small winery in the country and here, and that's it.
Yeah, they were like, there are, like, 100 bottles of this.
Yeah.
And there's one, I think they told us there were 68 bottles of it.
Yeah.
And they were serving us from that. And yeah, it was one of those, like, once in a lifetime opportunities, possibly twice, because I think I'll go back there at some point in my life.
So this couple comes in.
Oh, so I think they were from Jersey, and they come in, and they're...
I think they thought it was a bar.
Yeah, they thought it was a bar, and so first of all, like, so Rachel and I have this, like, two-person table. There's a group that's at this four-person table, another group that's at this other two-person table, and so all that's left is, like, this big table that's left. That's, like, a six-person table, and so they seat them at the big table, and they're like, can't we get another table? Like, can't we have a table like everybody else has? And they're like, and so the guy's like, no, like, we're not actually a bar. Like, you're supposed to reserve, like, Rachel had reserved this a month or so in advance. And he's like, no, like, you need to reserve. And they're like, okay, fine, we'll sit here. And they're like, okay, so I want a glass of this. She wants a glass of this. And then we want, I would like, do you have a food menu?
It's like, no, we only do tastings.
And
you have to buy a tasting. So, like, all white wine, all red wine, or whatever.
And I think, like, we got bread and stuff with our tasting.
Yeah, we had these little, like, biscuits.
They were tasty.
Mm-hmm. And sparkling water.
Yeah.
And you, like, get the rinse water for your glass and everything.
Like, it was a fantastic tasting. And so they're like, okay, well, we only want rosés. I'm like, we have, like, one or two rosés. Everything else is red or white. And they're like, okay, so we want, like, red and rosés. And they're like, no, like, you have to select the certain tastings. And it was just so awkward.
Oh, yeah. And they were probably on their phones the whole time. And they'd drink a bit and be like, eh, it's yeah. okay.
And then they'd be like, I want the next one. And I think that... The guy who was serving us was also serving this, like, adorable two elderly women from Britain, and he loved us, he loved them, and you could just see him walk away from the table and just roll his eyes. I made a point at that point because I could tell they were, I think, from Jersey.
He loved us because we loved everyone.
We loved everyone, but I also made a point of saying we were Canadian.
Yeah.
I was just like, back in Canada.
So that was kind of... It was kind of funny. And then we stumbled out into the daylight again and
ran down the hill. Because we were like, if we go down that... Like, we were quite tipsy when we left.
Oh, for sure.
And...
We walked back over to the Pesh side. So we crossed over one of the many bridges.
That was when we crossed the chain bridge, right?
Yeah, most of the time we walked over the chain bridge because that was the closest, which is the first... major bridge.
It's
across the Danube there. I was built by some nobleman.
Yeah.
In the 19th century, probably.
Budapest has a lot of bridges that are very known to everybody there, and they all have names and are quite famous, and we'll talk about a few of them when we get into
the
what
Liberty
we did on our last...
Bridge.
The Suicide Bridge.
Is the Liberty Bridge the Suicide Bridge?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we kind of, like, tipsily walked back over to the Pesht side, which, you know, took about half an hour...
Yeah, we were having a blast, so it didn't really matter to us what we were doing.
We got into this really touristy area near St. Stephen's Cathedral, and it started pissing rain.
And so we saw this place that had... We were kind of, like, walking down the strip. We knew it was going to be touristy and expensive, but we saw a place that said wine bar, and we'd been having wine. We walked up to it, and then I saw they had a hockey game on, and I was like, I haven't seen hockey in forever. We have to stop here. I don't even think I looked at the hockey game once we sat down, because it was some game that I didn't understand. They didn't have wine, despite the fact that they advertised themselves as a wine bar.
See, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, no, because we had to beer. We had beer or
we had,
cider.
We had, we had Hungarian beer. And every time we drank beer in Hungary, I would, like, watch your face as you drank it, and you, like, made this face.
I hate lagers, everybody. Like, here's the thing about Erin. She hates lagers.
They were very strong.
They were very strong. Yeah. And they just made
Did you like the Czech beer?
I preferred the Czech beer, but...
Well, those are more Pilsners.
Yeah. And I can drink, like, a Pilsner lager, but I don't like a... Like, I don't like lagers. I'm big on Belgian beer.
A very strong, certain kind of taste to it.
Yeah.
Which, like, I didn't mind, but I wasn't crazy about. I definitely preferred the wine, for sure.
Yeah. I couldn't do Hungarian beer, and, like... You can't see my face right now because this is on a podcast and we don't have any pictures of my beer face, but it was special. So yeah, we did that, and then it was still raining, so we decided to head over to the cathedral.
Which was beautiful and ornate and Was there singing in that one?
There was singing. There was the men's choir singing that. Yeah, and it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't really go very far into it because they had it pretty closed off inside to people actually going to the service.
Yeah, well, and that was the one, because I think I've been in so many Catholic churches by then that my Catholicism had started to catch up to me, and because I actually just... I felt something. It was like the 12 glasses of alcohol that I'd had by that point.
I look over and Aaron is kneeling.
And praying. And Rachel's like, "Aw, you're praying." And I was like, "Oh no, I felt this." My Catholicism came out there.
Yeah, I think shortly after that, I think we headed back to the apartment for a while, and then we... Did we go out to the Ruin Bars that night a little bit?
So we watched the season finale of Riverdale first.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a very important part of our trip.
Yeah, the TV that we got into on that trip is really important. Mm-hmm. So we watched the season finale of Riverdale. We were both like, what do we do now?
And then, we went to the Ruin Bars.
Yeah, and we also continued drinking while we were watching.
I mean, it was
Riverdale.
Friday night. It was also, I guess... I don't know if this would matter at all to Budapest, but we realized it was like Cinco de Mayo.
It was Cinco de Mayo. And also the thing we discovered, and I've actually talked to a number of European friends since then, is Budapest, because it's so cheap, has become like the Vegas of Europe.
And it was busy and douchey.
And all of the stags and hen parties.
Yeah, there was a ton of group parties. Like, we'd see people in, like, matching shirts being like, Budapest 2017, Steve's bachelor party.
Yeah, Team
like,
Steve. I really remember the Team Steve.
It wasn't terrible everywhere, but there was, like, the one kind of main strip of Ruin Bars that we were like, oh, this would be cool. And then we were like, holy fuck, there are so many 20-year-olds here.
We ran away immediately and found ourselves a much more chill area.
We found this, like, outdoor food market
Ruin Bar slash thing.
Yeah, and we... I don't remember what we ate. Oh, we had those cheeseburgers, quote-unquote cheeseburgers, or I did, where it was actually not a cheeseburger, but it was, like, deep-fried cheese in a burger.
And like, yeah, and I had, like, mozzarella triangles, which were the same thing, but they weren't really cooked that well either.
But it was kind of funny. And then we went and found a much more mellow sort of outdoor patio wine...
That one was lovely.
It was nice.
Well, because the Ruin Bars are Ruin Bar/Gardens. And so the one that we found was more of a garden. Like, the second one we went to was much more of a garden. It was lovely. We could chat.
It was cheap as fuck.
Oh, yeah. I think it was $2 a drink there.
It was less than that. It was like $1.50.
Yeah. And so we were spending nothing there.
That whole night, I think we spent like $40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
like,
it
for
was,
both of us.
Yeah. It was incredible.
But yeah, that was a fun night.
It was really good. That was really our only, like, epic sort of, like, pass out or get really drunk night.
Well, except for the night in Paris where we went to Marluce et Lapin.
Oh, yeah. And the time that we went to Musée d'Orsay and we drank the bottle of the wine in the middle of the day. And then ran around the museum and we're like, I want that for my apartment. I want that for my apartment.
Yeah, but we didn't have a lot of, like, we really, because we're doing so much during the day, we didn't have a lot of, like, rip it up in the evening.
No, we had, like, maybe three nights out of 3 weeks. Like, 3 nights out of 3 weeks is...
Yeah, like, we certainly weren't, like, clubbing all the time.
I don't think we ever went clubbing.
Well, no, we didn't.
We tried to get into the one in Prague, but they wouldn't let us in.
There was no one in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, moving on to Saturday.
Because you don't really care about our drunken escapades.
There are a few of them. So we got up that morning and
we were mildly hungover.
We slept in a bit and then we went to City Park.
City Park, and so City Park is quite beautiful.
We just came at it on the wrong side.
We came in it from the, like, if you come into Stanley Park, from the wrong side.
It's like, if you entered the park in the homeless area.
And so there's, like, all these tents and, like, weird things going on, and we're just like, what have we gotten ourselves into? And we'd both seen,
like,
pictures.
Oh, yeah, because I'd seen pictures of it on the internet. So I knew that there were parts of City Park in Budapest that are beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're walking through it, and I'm just like, I don't know where these parts are.
Yeah, and I was in the, I have to make the best of this, you know? I was like, don't worry, Rachel, it's still amazing. I think you were getting, like, annoyed with my chipperness by some point.
No, I was just kind of like, whatever.
And I was just super chipper that day.
I think we also hadn't eaten. That was the problem.
That's true.
So then we did finally find this castle.
Yeah, we turned around, we turned left, and we saw, like, a tent city, and then we turned left again, and we saw a castle. And yeah. We were much happier than when we saw tent city.
So we found this kind of, like, old, weird castle house in the park.
Yeah.
And we went and found some goulash.
Also, there was, do you remember the dude with the parrot that
was
the
chicken?
The chicken with the trumpet?
Yeah, he was playing an instrument and he had like this chicken that was like part of his show.
Yeah, and so he'd play the trumpet and the chicken would dance around.
Yeah, I do remember that. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was, we saw it before we got to the castle.
We went and had some goulash and bread, and we wrote postcards, and then, like, got our strength back.
Yeah.
So that was good. I mean, it was not nearly as good as the goulash we had in Prague.
No, that was the best goulash we... Well, I mean, I was supposed to say that's the best goulash I've ever had in my life, but I've really only had goulash, like, twice.
That's, like, the only two times I've ever had goulash.
So it was. I mean, I'm not lying. It's just not that big of an achievement.
Yeah. It was really fucking good.
I think it would still be the best if I'd had, like, goulash 20,000 times.
When we, like, exited the park, we realized that the really nice part was the part that was on the opposite side.
Yeah. Oh, and also the paths were under construction.
Yeah, so it's kind of a day of wandering, but that's okay. We had to get back to the apartment because we had big plans for the evening.
Yes. Oh, also, we saw the really interesting, it was, like, Victory Square mm-hmm. or something that was called.
Or, like, the Square of Heroes.
Yeah, Square of Heroes. And so
these dudes looked like these big statues of, like, these Hungarian, like, warrior dudes that looked fucking metal.
Yeah.
They had, like, these fur hats and giant mustaches and, like...
They looked like Vikings.
They, like, were, like, riding caribou or something. Like, it was awesome.
It was epic. And I also caught a really interesting Pokemon, but since I've had to give up Pokemon for reasons that you will discover later, I don't remember what it was.
But yeah, that the Hero Square was, it was pretty cool.
It was epic.
There was a ton of douchey guys posing with the statues.
Well, and there was also the beer bike bachelor tours that were going around, because they've got these things where it's like a bar, but you're on a bike, and so you have to pedal, and everybody's pedaling
while you're drinking.
It's something that Pat, my husband, would love. And I kept sending him pictures of it, being like, I know you'd love this. We're not doing it.
There's a seat in the back where you don't have to bike, and that's where I'd sit.
Yeah, we were talking about it, because I was like, I kind of want to bike, Rachel. And she's like, I can't do it. And I was like, you can sit there. I'll bike.
Anyway. So after we saw the Hero Square, we rushed back to the Airbnb so that we could get change, because we had big plans.
Big, big, fancy plans.
And we went to have... This was our fancy night.
Yeah.
Because we had tickets to the opera. And so we went out to... coincidentally, this place that I had seen online that looked super cool was, like, half a block from where we were staying.
Yeah.
Called the New York Cafe, which, like, the name of it does not at all describe what it's like.
It is stunning.
It's this crazy, ornate, Baroque... dining room in a hotel.
Yeah.
That's, like, the most fancy room you've ever seen.
Oh, it was just incredible. Like, we were both drooling.
Yeah, so, like, we went in and we had dinner and a couple of champagne cocktail, and we had spaghetti.
Yeah, we had spaghetti, but we had fancy spaghetti.
Fancy spaghetti.
And we had...
We had dresses on.
And we were all fancied up, and we had some wine after our champagne cocktail, too. And
then, we just kind of enjoyed the opulence.
And it was interesting because, like, everybody there was just in awe of the surroundings, too.
Just so fancy. Like, cherubs on the ceiling, gold on everything.
It reminded me of, like, the Sistine Chapel.
But, like, more, like, Rococo, fluffy, over the top.
I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah, it was super fun. And so, yeah, then we went to the Hungarian Opera.
With our $7 seats.
We had $7 seats, which I bought online, which were at the very top in the quote-unquote nosebleed section.
It was quite hilarious, too. So we tried to go in through the regular entrance, and then they were like, No. You have to go around to the side. And
yeah, go around the side of the building to the servants' entrance, essentially, basically.
We felt like we were the servants in Downton Abbey, because you're going up the stairs that are not decorated at all. Like, when you're going up the front, it would be very,
yeah,
like,
you don't get to go in the main opera hall, entrance. Like, you have to go through a different way.
You have to go through the side entrance. It's not decorated. It's, like, you actually have to, like, take these weird steps to get up into it, and then you're climbing up, and, like, people are coming up and down with food, and you're, like, going past the kitchens, like, we started our, like, we're the plebs joke there.
Yeah.
Which will continue on for...
We're just plebs.
We're just plebs. And so, finally, we climb the bajillion stairs that we have to get up.
It was nice once you got up there, because they had a bar.
And then you get into the actual, like, opera house, and it is just stunning.
Well, the cool thing was that being so close to the top, like, you're right near the roof, which is all painted, and, like, this beautiful ceiling.
And the chandelier, which is incredible.
So, initially, our seats were right up against the railing, crowded in with a bunch of other people, which I did not want to sit in, because it was too crowded and too high for me.
Yeah, Rachel's got a fear of heights. I've never actually seen you move so quickly as you did when you were just like, I want to get out of these seats, and you just like crawled over top of them.
Well, the problem was, like, if you wanted to get out, you had to like scooch past the people.
Yeah.
In all the seats that you're crowded by.
Yeah.
And the railing was not that high.
No, it wasn't.
Like, it didn't feel safe to me, especially because, like, when I'm around those kind of heights, I feel like I'm gonna throw up and fall down.
Well, I couldn't quite understand it at the beginning, because Rachel didn't want to go, like, because I just went in and went past everybody, and I was like, she's like, I'm just crawling over the seat, and I was like, what? What's going on?
It was scary.
Yeah, no, we were, like, it was very high, and the railing was very low. And I think I actually flashed a couple of people walking there, because my dress would get stuck on the velvet.
So we sat a row back where it was more empty, which was okay.
But the heat was rising.
It was fucking hot up there.
It was so hot. And we just climbed all of these stories, too. And so we turned our programs into fans. And we're sitting beside these girls who just...
We're super bitchy.
She, and just keep snarking at me, and they're like, can you stop?
They're like, your fan is crinkling. Stop crinkling.
And
like, literally, you couldn't hear. Like, there was people talking, there was music playing, you couldn't hear anything, but she was just like, stop that. Stop that.
And there were, like, people, like, anybody who moved in their seats, because it's an old opera house, too, like, you hear when anybody moves. So that was really annoying. But we then went to... Then intermission came.
So the first intermission came, and we run to the bar, and I order 4 glasses of wine, because I'm like, you can only drink at intermission.
Yeah.
So I'm like, let's pound 2 glasses of wine each. And then we get stuck out there, because we didn't get back to the intermission ending on time, so they wouldn't let us in for a couple minutes.
Yeah. Which is okay, because the opera, like... It's a love story. It's this tragic love story. You could quite easily follow it.
It's called Werther.
It was quite enjoyable, but it's an easy to follow. It's, you know, your Romeo and Juliet type.
Yeah, it was pretty funny because, so just on the note of us getting back into our seats, well, like, we couldn't get in there because she was just like, oh, I'll let you in, the door lady.
Yeah.
She's like, I'll let you in, but don't go to your seats, because she looked at our tickets and knew that our seats were somewhere else, which we obviously weren't going to sit in anyway because we weren't sitting there anymore.
Yeah.
So she put us in these other seats and we were like, oh, fuck, these are way better.
Yeah, we had these incredible seats. We were at the back of the opera. We could see everything.
So we were like, we're staying here.
Yeah, so we just stayed there for the rest because it was triple or a double intermission?
There was 2 intermissions.
Yeah, there was 2 intermissions. And so because we were right near the back for the second intermission, we were able to just bolt back out and get to the front of the line at the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then we sat there and like Werther, it's about like this guy named Werther, and he comes, it's like sort of a Regency style, sort of like early 1800s maybe.
Yeah, it's sort of like Jane Austen era, but it's French.
It's French.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, so, like, this woman has to marry this guy she's promised to, but she's in love with this other guy named Werther. And we just made fun of how dramatic he was.
Oh, yeah, because he was so dramatic. And she's also helping raise her sisters and brothers because her mother had died. And there's all of this drama around that. But, yeah, this Werther guy is just... You would never want to be in a relationship with this guy.
We just kept criticizing him because he was just like, you're my whole world and I'll die without you. And we're just like, that's not healthy.
This is not a good plan, Werther.
Although I guess we'd read a really boring opera where people were like well-adjusted and supportive.
Yeah.
And maybe polyamorous.
Yeah, we'd be like, hey, you like this? That's cool.
Yeah.
You also like that guy? That's cool. Okay,
so you're being a little obsessive right now. This isn't working for me.
I think I need to take a step back from that. That's cool.
I need self-care.
Yeah. Like, I'm just going to step over to the side and care for myself a bit. Maybe we can talk next week.
Although, there was one scene where, so they are obviously into each other, and then she's like, no, I gotta marry this guy, and then she goes, you have to go away, I gotta marry this guy, don't come back till Christmas, and there's intermission.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's Christmas, and he comes back, and they're reunited for the first time, and he sings that big solo.
Yeah.
That was fucking great.
That was amazing.
He was really, the singing was phenomenal.
Oh, and she was phenomenal, too. Mm-hmm. Also,
this is the Hungarian opera, which apparently is, like, the third most amazing opera house in Europe.
Yeah, so I was actually in the world, just in Europe. So I was really fascinated by that. So Paris is first, Milan is second, and then it's Hungary. And
is Milan La Scala?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, I just expected that Sydney would be up there.
Really?
Yeah, I assumed that Sydney would be up there because, like, but I guess Sydney is so famous for its, like, building, not
suck
necessarily.
Suck it, Sydney.
Sorry, Kate.
Suck it.
But yeah, and it's also just beautiful. Like,
the this is also like the they rarely boast Franz Liszt.
Yeah,
who is a composer who people were freaking out about in the 19th century. They have a big statue of him outside.
Plus everywhere, because when we walked into the... When we first got to walk into there before we got kicked out, there was his bust everywhere.
Mm.
He's been an answer in my Trivia League, which I just realized that I forfeited, because I didn't fill out today.
Oh, no, I did it last night.
I forfeited. I'm in first, and so I'm probably going to drop down to second.
But I did, too, because we probably have the same trivia questions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a Franz Liszt one recently, and I was like, I know this.
I know, and then...
And then I was telling Angus, I was like, Listomania, and he was like, that's not a thing. I was like, it is a thing.
It's totally
it's fucking, like, Beatlemania.
Yeah.
Franz Liszt was a composer, and women would freak the fuck out about him and, like, steal locks of his hair and, like, faint and shit.
Yeah.
Like, he was the original rock star.
Yeah. No, he was.
Mm-hmm. So we definitely saw his statue all over Budapest.
All over.
So that was our fancy night.
That was our fancy night.
It was fun.
We headed back to the apartment. Ooh, wine's getting to me there a little bit. We headed back to our apartment. We had actually passed a really cool ruin bar on our way, and we were hoping to find our way back to it. We couldn't find it. So we just went back. I think we had a glass of wine. And we headed to bed because we wanted to get up early to see the rest of Budapest because we know we only had one day there.
Yeah, we wanted to go back up to the Buda area and explore a little bit more in that area. So we, headed to bed and got up the next day and knocked a few things off our list. Got back up to the Buda side and we took the funicular.
We took the funicular up, which...
To Buda Castle area.
Which is really interesting, because it's so old. The funicular, we didn't take it when we were in Paris this time, but, like, the one going up to Montmartre is quite new. Mm. It was modern in 1996 when I took it. I don't know what it looks like today. But this one was, like, ancient. Like, it was, you got into, it was wooden, there's, like, wooden chairs. It reminded me of, like, an old wooden railway car, essentially.
Yeah, so if you don't know what a funicular is, it's like a car.
Yeah.
Of some kind that, by a car, I mean, like, you're in an elevator.
Yeah, it's an elevator that goes up the side of a mountain, so it's not designed like a regular elevator. There's sort of, like, multi-layers to it, and it's at an angle.
Goes up, on a diagonal, sort of, pulls you up the side of a mountain, and there's windows, and it takes, 5 to 10 minutes, maybe, less than
that. It's sort of, like, it's similar to a gondola. Like, it's probably most similar to a gondola, but it goes on rails.
Up the side of a mountain.
Yeah, and it goes on rails rather than going on something that pulls it.
Yeah, so we got up to Buda Castle area. We wandered around, and we had heard of this thing of this underground wine fountain, and we really wanted to find it. So we looked online to find out where this, like, underground labyrinth was.
Yeah.
And this was seriously one of the weirdest fucking things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Oh, and one of the creepiest things I've ever done in my life.
Yeah. Like, we did not know what we were in store for.
Uh-huh.
We found it on the street, like, this little door that was like, you know, here's the labyrinth of Budapest or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And we go down all these, like, steep stairs and we go down into this labyrinth. And we pay our little fee and go in, like, down these stairs underground. And then we walk in and, like, pretty clearly it becomes apparent that this is going to be, like, a really cheesy mannequins dressed in old-timey garb sort of...
With weird music.
With weird music. It's playing an opera, and I don't remember who the opera's by. I can probably look it up, though.
But it's essentially this duke, I believe. It was a duke who fell in love with an opera singer, and then she didn't love him, and so he killed her. And now, then he killed himself, and so he haunts the labyrinth. It was really weird. But yeah, the opera's going on in the background and music from it.
Yeah, but they have all these, like, super cheesy mannequins, like, store-type mannequins.
Yeah.
And they're, like, really dusty-looking and terrible. So, yeah, we started out thinking that this place was, like, really cheesy and hilarious, which it was.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I just pulled up the TripAdvisor page for it, and this person's review is hysterically horrendous. I cannot get over how bad this exhibition was. Yeah.
Like, it was bad, but, like, I wouldn't... This
was funny bad.
I wouldn't give it one star, because it was actually kind of enjoyable.
Yeah, it was cool. But, like, then you leave the awful, like, mannequin opera story time, and then at one point they're just like, go into the darkness of the labyrinth, because that's how people would have experienced it, and you literally just walk into the dark.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously we have our phones.
Yeah.
So we had our phones out. But it's creepy as fuck.
It's so creepy. And
you walk for a while in complete goddamn darkness.
And you can't know, like, you don't know what direction you're going. And the guy at, when you're checking in, was completely useless. And so you're like, I could just get lost in here forever.
Yeah.
There were moments, and, like, it is such a labyrinth, too. Like, you just get so...
Their reviews are so bad.
They are so bad. I would give them a decent review. Like, I wouldn't say pretty terrible or hysterically horrendous. Maybe a little disappointing.
Well, because we went there looking for the wine fountain, and we did not find it.
Apparently, there are private tours of it that you can go on it.
They also brag, in a way I didn't notice till we left, that there's, like, a connection to Dracula, that Dracula was kept as a prisoner down there, but none of that is down there.
Oh, it might have been. We just might not have turned down that way, because there's no way to find out what way you're going.
Maybe you have to book a separate tour. But, like, we didn't see a single Dracula-related thing.
We just saw this weird opera stuff.
Just like, but then when you're in the dark and you're walking around these tunnels and you don't know which way you're going, and, like, I had a moment of being like, am I going to get out of here?
Yeah.
But you, like, there's, like, one part where there's, like, and all the mannequins are behind, like, these gates, so you can't actually interact with them. They're sort of, like, closed off. But there was those, like, in-the-dark mannequins with blue eyes.
Yeah. No, they were blue with the red eyes.
They were blue and they had red
eyes.
So, like, you go around a corner and you're in the dark, but you can see, like, these figures of people totally dark that, like, look kind of demonic.
Yeah.
Like, sort of, like Nightcrawler from X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get up there and then they're, like, these are the children that got lost in the labyrinth. And you're just like, oh my god.
So, it was super enjoyable because it was crazy cheesy and ridiculous.
And we like creepy things, but if you're not into that, don't do it.
But yeah, it was... We didn't see any Dracula, we didn't find a wine thing, but it was fun.
I did see one review, it's not up there now, but it was like, if you want to torture your children.
Yeah. I was thinking that too. I was like, if children were in here, they could get really freaked out.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I was a little freaked out.
I think there were moments where I just grabbed onto you because I was like, I don't want to be alone right now.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, like, that was our labyrinth experience. We should probably move along.
Yeah, so we finished the labyrinth and we headed... Oh, it also advertises itself as the...
Oh, yeah.
The 8th best tourist attraction in Europe.
That's what the brochure says, the 8th most visited tourist attraction in Europe.
And we're like, no.
Yeah, I've never heard of this in my life.
And also, like, we can name 8 more attractive tourist attractions off of the top of our heads.
Like, where does that statistic come from? Can you say things like that? And it's
okay? Oh, yeah. So I work in marketing. You totally can. The thing is, so you...
Can or you can't?
No, you can.
You can't.
So what you do is you take a really small sample size.
Oh, yeah.
And so you sample, like...
People you know that have been to there your thing.
To your thing and like it. And so...
And you give them 7 other choices?
Yeah. Or all you do is you take a number of people and give them 8 choices and they rank you 8th. And
you
then you're the 8th best tourist attraction in Europe. I mean, it's not a good way of doing marketing, and in no way do I think that anybody should do that, and that's not the way I market. But yes, you can do it.
So we continued on by going underground more.
But we went to a much better underground place.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in Budapest. There is a hospital that was built into the rocks in World War II.
Well, no, it was built... So this museum is called the Hospital in the Rock. And
yeah.
The actual underground caverns were, I think, from Roman times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The caverns are old.
Yeah, they're super old. But then previous to World War II, they started to outfit it as some kind of a hospital.
Yeah, because they realized that it would be... After World War I, they realized that it would be safe for bombings.
Yeah.
Because it's built into the rocks, and so it'd be hard to bomb, and also, even if it was bombed, it wouldn't actually get into the facility.
So I think they only really set it up to, what, it says the facility was designed for 60 to 70 patients, but then during World War II, it dealt with over 600.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really cool. They take you down into, you know, the hospital, and they have it set up, again, with mannequins, but obviously done much better with, like, actual old equipment that they would have used in that time.
And you can only do it on a tour, so you have a tour guide that's giving you a lot of information.
Yeah, I liked our tour guide. She had a cold, but she was really loud.
Yeah, and she was very saucy.
Yeah, she was. So, yeah, I mean, like, it was really interesting, and, like, they talked a lot about, like, the troubles, and I didn't know this about Budapest, but, so, like, coming into the city, like, it does have, like, there are parts of it that feel kind of run down, and in some ways it reminds you a little bit of parts of Paris or parts of London, and that there are big monumental buildings, that it is very beautiful, but it is more run down, and there's less care put into the city.
It reminded me, you haven't been to Germany, but it reminded me a bit of Berlin in that way.
But it does have a lot of really beautiful old, like, Art Nouveau buildings.
And, yeah, which you lack in Berlin.
But, yeah, so you see in this museum that, which I didn't know, was that Budapest had the shit bombed out of it in World War II.
Yeah, the Siege of Budapest, because...
Which was about 100 days long or something like
that. Oh, it was crazy, because so what had happened is the Nazis occupied Hungary, and we'll get into that a little bit later, too. The Nazis occupied Hungary, so Hungary was on their side. And they decided that Budapest was, like, their sort of staple ground that they could not give up because it's so close to Russia that it was that sort of connection. And so they had to hold Budapest no matter what. And so the Soviets, with help from allies, just bombed Budapest because they figured if they could get a hold of Budapest, it would really, you know, punch a hole in the Nazis' ability to fight them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just continually bombed Budapest. I realize I'm, like, flipping back and forth between Budapest and Budapest.
Budapest. I knew that, too.
But, yeah, so they bombed Budapest. And, like, literally, the Siege of Budapest is incredible. Like, the damage that was done to the city, it was done in...
It was just leveled.
It was leveled. And so this happened between 44 and 45.
Yeah.
The bridges are completely leveled. And So,
like, every single bridge?
Most of them, I think. Like, we saw the chain bridge. I think every bridge.
The chain bridge.
No, the chain bridge was the one that really blew me away, was when they showed a picture of the chain bridge
demolished.
They were all gone. Like, Budapest?
Yeah, there were pictures in this museum of the city, and it was amazing. Like, it's amazing to me that the city looks as good as it does now, considering how leveled it was.
What it
was. Less than 100 years ago.
It really blew me away, because I was in Berlin, like, 6 months previous to this, and Berlin, Hitler made Berlin Fortress Berlin, and so, like, Berlin could not fall to him. And so, again, the Allied forces just attacked Berlin and bombed Berlin. And so Berlin was leveled, and Berlin has not rebuilt in the same way. And so you go to Berlin today, and it's very much like there's a few old buildings, but it's very much like, you know, like a 1950s, 1960s city.
Yeah.
And it's very, like, especially when you're on the East Berlin side, it's
but
very
Budapest
Soviet.
Budapest feels way older than that.
Budapest. And so I couldn't get over that, because I feel like they were both destroyed to almost the same extent. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine Budapest getting, like, because part of the thing with Berlin is that they weren't getting money. Mm-hmm. But I guess because in the end of World War II, Hungary converted to our side.
Yeah.
And so I think they got more money to rebuild.
Yeah.
But then they were part of the Soviet Union. And so I this is something I've been talking to my husband about, is I really want to look more into this. And I think I kind of want to do a podcast, like, going further into this, because it just, it fascinates me how destroyed Budapest was. And I didn't know anything about it.
Me either.
I also do remember saying to you at one moment, just because, like, it's interesting when you go to, like, when I went to Berlin and I saw how the destruction of Berlin, and I was kind of okay with it because, you know, like, Hitler was there, Nazis were there, and everything. But when I was in Budapest, and I was like, this is just a city that happened to be occupied, and then we, like, our side did this to them, it really struck me as something, and it really made me realize sort of the casualties of war in a way I don't think I've ever fully thought of before.
Yeah, and in the hospital in the Rock, they really kind of show you, like, the horrors of, like, the people crammed into the hospital in the hallways, and, like, you know, they would have infection, and they would run out of bandages, and they're underground, so the ventilation is not that great. So just, like, the smell and the, like, it just, it was a really neat, I mean, obviously it's gory and it's not pleasant, but the experience of it, the museum was really cool.
Yeah, because they're cramming, like, you know, they've got these bunk beds that they're cramming 6 to 8 people in. Mm-hmm.
They're pushing them together to cram a lot of people into 2 beds.
Because it's not built for this. They're reusing bandages because they can't. And because, like, because it's fortress, like, it's the siege of Budapest, they can't actually go outside and get more bandages.
Mm-hmm. And so past World War II, they still used this same hospital space for the revolution.
Yeah.
In the 50s, there was a Budapest tried to have a revolution. They were quashed by the Soviets.
Yeah.
So, like, but it was a revolution home.
Yeah.
That hid a lot of people down there.
And unlike the Prague one that we talked about in earlier episodes, or this wasn't necessarily the same peaceful revolution that Prague
and it wasn't
had.
A successful one.
No, they did not. No. They were not successful. They were, you know, completely.
Well, and there was a kind of a really neat photograph in there of, like, the people who had, 2 young people that had met during revolutionary times that had made a baby, and the baby was born down there in the hospital underground. And then there was a picture of the woman who was fully grown. So even if, let's say if she was born in the 50s, she'd be in her 60s now.
Yeah, she's our parents' age.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it was like her coming back with her parents to the hospital and taking a picture as a full-grown woman, and that was a really cool connection.
It was really neat.
And then post that time, when the Soviets came in and they took out and they cleared it out, I mean, they turned it into a nuclear bunker.
Yeah.
And they prepped it for all kinds of, like, nuclear, you know, gas, air quality issues.
Yeah, and they talked to us about all of that. Unfortunately, with today's weapons, it would not be able to sustain an
impact.
Yeah, they showed us a picture of what, like, the bomb that went on Hiroshima, and then the bomb that is capable today, and my mind was literally blown.
Yeah.
I could have looked at that on the internet, but I've never thought to do it, and It was incredible.
Yeah, they have this big poster on the wall of, like, here's Hiroshima. It's the size of a loony. And then here's what we can do today. It is the size of your living room wall.
And you're like, okay, so everything's over, especially because we have Trump. Let's just drink a lot more wine.
So, I mean, but, like, I will say about the museum, like, yeah, there is a lot of devastating and difficult things to do with it. I mean, there's World War II, there's people dying, there's people stuck underground, there's nuclear war, there's all this stuff. But, like, it didn't depress me.
No, it felt very hopeful, too.
It did. It was like, look at all these people that survived, and look at all the things people do to band together. And, like,
and that's look what I think we can do.
That's like, what I find is a really good mark of that kind of museum or that kind of film. Or, like, when you're like, this is really harrowing, but the human nature is for us to continue to try to help each other. And so the overall feeling of the museum, to me, was really great.
Well, and the way they ended is really great, too, because they end with the being a bomb shelter side, but you walk out into the paper cranes.
Right.
And that's the symbol of hope that came out of the Hiroshima bombing.
But I will say, Museum Hospital in the Rock, if you're listening to me, get a bigger and better awesome gift shop.
Oh, man, you could do so much with your gift shop. We wanted to spend so much money. We would have spent.
There was, like, really cool, like, World War II shit. Like, I did buy one of your glass syringy things, which is super rad, but, like, more. Give me more.
I kind of wanted to buy your shovel, but how was I going to take that home?
I just think that you could do way more with the retro hospital stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Your gift shop could be, you know, contact us and we'll help you. I work in a museum.
I'll live in Budapest.
Yeah, so will I.
I absolutely will live back there.
I work in a museum. I help manage a museum gift shop.
Like, I have an art background.
We'll help you with this.
So we'll be there soon.
Yeah, so just let us know if you want us to come over and do your gift shop. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Hospital in the Rock. Fucking awesome.
Do it.
Check it out. That was definitely a highlight.
So, then we headed, and we grabbed some food from a restaurant that had just opened. So, we didn't really get anything. It was kind of shitty.
We tried to go to St. Matthew's Church, but the internet lied to me and told me it was open till 5, but it was only open till 3.
Because they had a weird, they were doing a filming of a choir singing or something, but we still got to climb the tower.
We climbed the tower and got to see a view of the city, which was nice.
Yeah, it was not as stunning as Ljubljana's.
Nope.
But it was really cool, and our guide was adorable. I had a big crush on him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's totally my type.
He was cute.
He's a skinny white boy who is nerdy and clean-shaven. Of course, I have a crush on him.
He knows
about history. Yeah, I had a huge crush on him.
But it would have been nice to see the inside of the church, but the outside of the church was stunning.
It was beautiful, yeah.
I'm trying to remember, did we do anything else on our last day after that?
We did the boat tour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We went and found a boat tour. Like a little, like, Danube River cruise, and where you got to have a glass of champagne,
and again, we joked that we were the plebs, because you could spend this, like, really expensive amount of money and go have this, like, fancy, not fancy, but it
some
was really pricey,
buffet dinner,
and there was, like, music down there, but upstairs, we got 2 glasses of champagne, and there was Hungarian music being played, and then we could go up onto the rooftop. Mm-hmm. We met a lovely couple from Ireland.
Yeah.
They had a bar, so you could get more wine.
There was a really beautiful sunset, and we got to see the lights of the bridges, and that was really nice.
It was a great way to sort of end our trip in Budapest, and, well, as we've been joking, like, our trip really had the river theme, and we talked about it in the Ljubljana episode, so it was really great to add another river onto that. And we love, it's just stunning. That boat cruise was amazing. Mm-hmm. I still think about it. It's actually my wallpaper on my work computer.
Nice.
It's one of the pictures from that. And so then we got, once we finished our boat tour, we headed to, so there's this incredible monument that I'd been wanting to go to the entire time that we were in Budapest. And it's the shoes on the Danube. And it is meant to honor... So there were these Jewish The Jewish population in Budapest, when they were occupied by Nazis, there was a day. Do you know the day that it was?
So, January 1945, during World War II, that they lined up a lot of Jewish people on the river and basically told them to remove their shoes because their shoes were still of worth.
Yeah.
But the people were not. And then they told them to jump into the river and... I don't know if they just jumped or if they also...
They shot at them.
They shot at them.
They shot at them with arrows. I think it was arrows. I'm pretty sure it was arrows.
So they forced a whole bunch of people out of this particular building, this execution brigade.
Yeah, called the Arrow Cross.
Maybe it's because they're called the Arrow Cross.
That's, I think,
the Arrow Cross House.
Yeah. You know, they shot at them with bayonets. Like, it was with rifles that had bayonets on the end.
Yeah, so, but then they left their shoes on the side of the river, and it's basically these, I think, bronze sort of shoes that are there to remind you of the people that kicked off their shoes, and they're actually really these, like, lovely 1940s, like, high heels, and
and
little kid shoes.
And it's really, it's neat the way they put them, too, like... There'll be some will be on their side, and like they
That's
will
very natural to how you, shoes would actually be if you just had just kicked them off your feet.
It just it made me cry. Like I literally cried being there. It's always hard for me looking at Holocaust memorial things or anything to do with the persecution of Jews because my best friend from Edmonton, who's been my best friend since I was 20, is Jewish, and so it's always, like, the realization that she might not be here because of these things, and so it always really, I have no Jewish background at all, but these monuments always really touch me really hard because of her.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really sad and beautiful memorial.
Yeah.
And there were lots of candles and sort of candle wax and notes. And, like, it was very obvious that people visited it often.
Yeah, and we lit a couple, too.
Yeah, there was a lot of candles there, and we sort of relit some. And,
yeah. We had our moment with it. Because I think it's one of the, like... We've both seen a lot of monuments. We saw a lot of monuments on our trip. We've both seen the monuments in our life.
It's a really touching one.
That one and the monument to the murdered Jews in Berlin are the two monuments that have really hit me in my life.
I haven't seen that one.
That one's incredible.
Yeah, I bet.
And so we finished
I mean, that's very close to the front of Parliament.
Yeah.
Which is this really large, crazy, like, you can't miss it.
Oh, it's...
I mean, it does kind of remind you of Parliament in London.
Yeah, and I think we found out that it was sort of built on the design of Parliament in London.
I think there was somebody involved in the building of that one who also was involved in London Parliament, and you can really tell when you look at it.
Yeah, it's just got the same structure. And you kind of feel like it doesn't have a big bend, but it sort of feels like there's kind of that tower at the end. When we go back to Budapest, because I feel like I am definitely going back to Budapest, I would love to do a tour of Parliament.
We, you know, we kind of walked back that night, and we found a lot of really cool, they really had a lot of very political and monumental sculptures about nationality and, you know, just, like, the people.
Yeah, there's the one that had it was meant to look like bullet holes in the wall. And that was really close to the one with the shoes, because...
Yeah, it was on the other side of Parliament.
Yeah, and they just have these incredible political monuments. And
there's
and
just a ton of political art in Budapest.
And it's interesting because it's recent, too. Like, it's not stuff that is ancient. And so I actually remember turning to Rachel when I saw the one that had the bullets in it. And it's from, like, the 50s or the 60s. It's to do with the Hungarian Revolution. And I was like, I wish we don't have these same, like, violent struggles in British Columbia, but we still have some of these, like, incredible destruction of our society that happens, and I wish we had these monuments in a way.
And like more public artwork dedicated to that kind of thing.
Yeah, because I feel like our public artwork is dedicated to thoughts. And like it's very abstract, most mm-hmm. of our public art. And I feel like we need to look at our darker history and create public art for that and get awareness of it. Like, we had the Japanese internment. We have the Downtown East Side and
First Nations.
Yeah. Like, I feel like, and I don't know if like European countries are better off because they do that, or if you just feel better because you do it.
We certainly have a lot of problematic history.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to First Nations. But we haven't been through a war.
No.
I don't know if that, like, I think if you've been through a war, like a city like Budapest has,
yeah,
you can't not let that alter your physical identity
yeah.
in such a huge way.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I agree that I would be in favor of seeing more of that here, but I think in those countries it's an even bigger part of their identity.
Oh, yeah. Like,
because they're so much older.
Yeah. Well, and we haven't been through the same thing. Like, Canada turns 150 this year.
Yeah.
And
We're babies.
Like, we were going to places, like, that were first touched in, you know, 200 BC. Yeah. And, like these cities are built in 300. Like, it's crazy.
That's why we live Europe.
That's why we want to live there.
Yeah.
I love that.
I'm trying to think of, like, we walked back to our apartment and we packed and...
Oh, no, we walked past, there was the monument that we walked past to yeah. the Hungarian. So there's a monument that's meant to, I think it's for peace.
It's for peace, and it's saying, like, it's protesting the German occupation, and it's for the Jewish people that died during World War II, but people were protesting it because they're saying, don't absolve Hungary as being part of the German occupation. But don't pretend that they weren't a part of it, because they were.
Yeah, we did terrible things. I'm speaking as the we, as if I'm Hungarian, but, like, we've done terrible things, and so they would...
There's a big eagle...
Yeah.
Is a part of it?
Like, yeah, the German eagle.
There's this big German eagle yeah. that's being taken down by something. It was just interesting because there is, like, there's all these, like, papers and protest
and
signs.
And names of, like, Hungarian people that...
Like, shoes.
Shoes. And yeah. And
we just kind of came across and we're like, what is this?
And I took a bunch of pictures of it that I'll post. And the other thing... there was this one Hungarian doctor, and he was, we encountered his name in the hospital in the Rock, there's this one Hungarian doctor that falsified a ton of passports for Jewish
to get them out of the country.
And so one of the things talked about,
these heroes,
is like, he's a hero, these people are not.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting to see that divide and to recognize that even
it's like not,
now...
We can't wash over the dark parts of our history. We were on the Nazi side for X amount of time. Like, we can't just say they're the bad guys, we're the good guys.
Yeah, and
like,
you can't
just kind of glossing over history, and that's not okay.
Well, you can't just say we were occupied because we didn't fight against it. And,
yeah.
And, like, I, as me... I understand why you wouldn't necessarily fight against it, because you're terrified for your own life. You're terrified for your family's life.
Sure, but it's a slippery slope to gloss over history.
Oh, no, you can't. You can't. You have to recognize yeah. that, you know, it's the same as in life in general. You have to recognize when you make bad choices, and these mm-hmm. like these bad choices,
like, I guess if you're gonna make a monument, be like, here's a monument to how badly we fucked up.
Yeah. Or you know, like, we were occupied, these are not necessarily the choices we would have made, but this is still what we did. Like, you have to make a monument, because I think the thing is, they're trying to make a monument that recognizes that these are not the decisions they would have made on their own. And
I mean, what are you going
to
do?
Well, how do you make a monument to say, we only did this because we were occupied by Nazis.
Maybe that kind of thing doesn't deserve a monument.
And so I think that's the thing, is I think just don't.
So, like, why is there a monument trying to absolve us of any kind of guilt here?
And it's, I think it's, that's the problem, is I think it, and I, like, I can't imagine what it feels to be in any of those, because, like,
I'm trying to think back to, like, being in France, and, like, are there any monuments to, oh, whoops, we were occupied by Nazis, but, like, we didn't necessarily want to be, but it was easier for a while.
But France was different. Like, France never, like, with Budapest and Hungary, they were occupied and did join the Nazi side.
France just
got occupied. France was just occupied, and you were unsafe living in France. So it's different. Hungary's a completely different story, and it's you know what, like, it's
like
really
Canada
easy.
was a part of World War II, and that we went over there and were a part of it. But it's so different to be in these cities that are scarred by being in those wars. Like, it's when you're there and you see these museums and these broken down buildings and these monuments to all these people that died, it makes it so much more real. And it's so sobering, and it's so interesting as a Canadian, because our country is so young.
So young, and, like, especially as Western Canadians, like,
even as Canadians, because, like, we've had a little tiny bit of fighting, maybe, but, like, even America's had a civil war, but Canada's, like,
all we have is the War of 1812.
Yeah.
And we weren't even Canada then.
Yeah.
We were fighting as Upper Canada and Lower Canada and as the British.
Yeah, we just don't have those wounds.
Yeah, we don't have those wounds, and especially as Western Canada, we don't have anything. Like, Western Canada has never fought in a war other than sending people overseas.
Well, and the wounds of,
First
ruining
Nations.
First Nations communities.
But as white people.
It's a different kind of war.
Also, as white people, as white people in Western Canada, we've never experienced anything like anybody has in Europe. And that was a conversation that my husband and I had last weekend, because at my grandfather's funeral, we were talking about how the war played a role in everybody's lives, whether or not you went overseas or not.
Right.
And so, like, my grandfather never went overseas, but, you know, he had to put his life on hold for X amount of years because he was fixing planes, and you never knew when the war was going to end. But that's very different.
Very different.
Than knowing, like,
than living in a war zone.
And whether or not, like, your home is going to exist, if all of your family is going to exist, if your family is going to be executed, if you're going to be taken into captivity. Because it's not just Jewish people that were taken into captivity, too. It was people that were sympathizers.
Everybody in that city was at risk of being killed because of bombing and destruction.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that for you and I, as people interested in this kind of history, that was a really valuable and interesting thing that we gained from being in Prague and Slovenia and Budapest, areas that we hadn't spent a lot of time in.
Yeah.
To see, like, the impact of World War II and, you know, and also the Soviet communist era.
Yeah, the communist era. Ever since I went to Berlin in the fall, I've just become fascinated with that. That's part of why I wanted to go to Eastern Europe.
Well, I took, you know, that history of science class in the fall where we talked a lot about the Cold War.
Yeah.
And, you know, atomic warfare and things like that. And that, you know, has kind of brought those things a little bit more into my mind as well.
Well, and it's even fascinating, like, my mother in the 60s had to do these drills where, like, you had to dive under a desk and, like, that's not really going to protect you from an atomic bomb. But they still did that. But it's still not the same as, like, I imagine, like, the children in Europe that are having to practice these drills and stuff are way more traumatized. And it's harder because the war's 15 years ago. Their parents probably fought in it. They probably lost, like, loved ones.
We should probably wrap this up. But before I get too far down the rabbit hole, I mean, like, we're talking about people having to live through the Cold War and how scary that was. Sometimes I don't feel like we're that far away from that.
Oh, I feel terrified every day.
Yeah, like, I mean, we're in Canada, but I don't know if that protects us, but
we're so close to the States.
There are
right?
way more nuclear weapons now possessed by different countries and shady fucking politicians and...
Oh, we're in a scarier state than the Cold War, I think, right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really different, but it's the reality is that it could happen. Like, we just don't know what's going to happen.
I also feel like in the Cold War, we had saner people in control of our nuclear weapons.
Well, in the case of the States, absolutely.
Well, also in North Korea.
Yes, that is correct.
And possibly even Russia.
Yeah.
It's a scary place. But anyways, to get back on track.
Rabbit hole.
We're going down a rabbit hole. We may divide this episode in two, so you don't have to deal with all of us.
No, we're just going to post it all.
So anyways, we get back to our hotel.
This is what happens when you drink too much Hungarian wine.
So we get back to our hotel. We pack everything up. We have a terrible time getting a cab because it's just freaking ridiculous.
We're really scared to call a cab because everything we read on the internet tells us that Hungarian cabs are like the mafia.
And so we finally get in a cab. We get in the cab. We actually have quite a nice cab driver for getting out there, even though he's very confused at the beginning. But we get to the airport and
we have to stay up. Our flight is at 6 a.m.
So we have to get there at 4 because we're going on an international flight because...
So we just stay up all night.
We stay up all night. We get to the...
So tired.
We are so tired. We get to the airport in this cab. I'm following it on my Google Maps because we're just kind of terrified after reading everything that we've read. And I'm like, okay, he's actually following the right route. Everything's good. We get to the airport. Rachel gets out of the cab
to pull the suitcases out.
And then the guy just starts screaming at me. And so I get really flustered. I'm trying to pay him. I'm trying to tip him. And this is where I get really flustered because I'm actually just trying to get into my Hungarian money because I paid on credit card to tip him. He's screaming at me to get out of the cab.
You should have just not even tried to tip him.
I should have not tried to tip him. My phone falls out of my lap in this. I don't realize it until I get out of the cab and he's driven away. So my phone is having a lovely life touring Budapest, probably from the back of the cab, probably in some, like, scummy person's hands now. The last time I checked, it was touring the Jewish quarter, and recently
so we got to the airport, and Erin lost her phone.
And
well, not you didn't lose your phone. Your phone was a casualty of a terrible cab.
And it's having a great life touring Budapest, mm-hmm. and we... had some champagne at
went to the coffee shop and we were just like champagne. We should have orange juice. So that champagne and like cinnamon buns or something.
And orange juice.
And then we flew to London.
And I got scoffed by this guy in the lineup to get on to the plane because Rachel's like, we should go to the gallery. What was it?
Oh, yeah. So we were standing in line to get on the plane to go to London, and we were talking about what we wanted to do in London on our one day there. And I said, well, let's go to the National Gallery, which is one of the foremost galleries in Europe.
And I'm like, we've seen so many galleries, I think I'm just going to stay home. Aaron's what's even like, there?
She's like, I don't care about the National Gallery. And this guy who's standing in front of us, who's obviously probably from London.
He's definitely very British. Yeah.
He turns around and he's just like, oh my God, the National Gallery is amazing. You're like, what's there? And I'm like, well, Da Vinci's and Vermeer's and Holbein's and...
And so next time you'll get to discover how I felt when I actually went to the National Gallery.
And you were like, oh, there's actually good artwork there. Okay.
Yeah. But it was that moment. I was just like, we've been to everything. I just don't know if I mean, part of it was I just lost my phone and I was bitchy about that. But so yeah, next time you'll hear about my reaction when I actually got to the National Gallery, how I survived without a phone.
Which is just fine. Spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
She was fine.
I loved it. What we did in London and England for our final days.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
We don't have a Budapest cheers.
Happy Budapest.
Nice driveway.
Nice driveway. Oh, 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 oh